a holding on Chof Dalet Amud Aleph, second line from the top.
Simon, the matchmak sack with the simon for the name of the various figures from Tanakh, who we're going to say hello. We're
starting with David, then Yeshaya, then Micha, etc., who summarized or condensed the 613 of the mitzvahs of the Torah into a smaller number of mitzvahs.
So what does that mean? What does that mean to condense them? Starting with the Rivon says, for example, that
at the beginning they were tzaddikim, they were able to accept on them many mitzvahs, hundreds of mitzvahs. In later generations, they weren't such great tzaddikim. If they tried to keep all the mitzvahs, nobody would be able to manage it, nobody would be able to zeicha in all of it. So therefore, David condensed them, kind of summarized Hamidon, Bod David Hamidon Alachas Esrei. So David went and established it on the basis of 11. Meaning, if they keep, the Rivan says, meaning that this way, if people keep these 11 mitzvot, they will be zeicha.
So what that means exactly, so
you have a number of different variations among the Meforshim, among the Rishonim and Achronim to explain what that means. Does it mean, obviously, you still have to keep all the mitzvot? Does it mean, for example, that for one
way of looking at it is in the top of the Dalet Amud Aleph?
Does it mean that just summarizing the mitzvahs under 11 major headings, that each of these things that we're going to discuss, each of these 11 middos that we're talking about, encapsulates within it a bunch of mitzvahs? So if you're careful with all the 11 of them, automatically that gives you a way to keep all the mitzvahs. Is it an idea like you'll keep these 11 and you'll have the that'll give you that Hashem will thereby give you the will help you with the same protection against the Yetzer Hara as if you kept all 613. Eventually, you have to keep all the 613, but it'll be by doing these 11, you'll have the tools that will be, you'll have an easier time fighting against the Yetzer Hara.
It's
Kapitel Tesvav of Tillam, we're going to quote, Kapitel Tesvav, So the variety of different explanations. Marsha says the vote is not all the 613 mitzvahs can you do in all times and all places. We know that there are some mitzvahs only can be done when the Beis Mikdash is standing, some only by Kohanim, etc. These 11 can be done by everybody.
Everyone and everywhere. And therefore the idea is that you do these and that kind of encapsulates within all the mitzvahs.
Okay. What does it mean?
We'll get there. Hold on. So what is Mizmor LeDavid? This day, but you have a positive account. That's what the positive Bible says.
Mizmor LeDavid, Hashem mi yogur b'ahalacha. Hashem, who will dwell in your tent, meaning together with Hashem, who will be on a level to be closer to Elikos. Mi yishkan b'ha'kotchecha, who will dwell on your holy mountain. And he starts listing 11 midas. Holech tamim. We're going to explain phrase by phrase what each of these means. But first, we're going to quote the psukim. Holech tamim, somebody who goes in a simple, straightforward way.
Or
poyel tzedek, somebody who acts in a righteous way, the Dover Emes Bilvavoy, and speaks truth in his heart. So far we have three. Holach Tamad Poyol Tzedek Dover Emes Bilvavoy. Number four, Le Rogal Al Lashone. He doesn't speak Lashon Hara. Rogal means Meloshon Rechilus.
Why are we using the word Rogal?
Because that's Rochal and Rogal are related. A Chof and a Gimel sometimes interchange.
Number five,
he didn't do evil against somebody, against his fellow man. Number six, he didn't bear embarrassment
because of his relative. Again, we'll explain soon what he means, but first
we're just quoting the psukim and translating. Number seven, Nivza Be'enov Nimos, the contemptible one is disgusting in his eyes. Number eight, that Yirei Hashem Yechavit, Nivzeh, the one who was contemptible, the Ein of Nimas is abhorrent, is disgusting in his eyes.
What's the difference between Nivaz and Nivzeh?
So they're two different expressions for disgusting. There's different ways of explaining the psukim, and in fact, the Meforshim on the pasuk have different ways of understanding. Is it that Nivzeh is the adjective and Nimas is the verb, that he is disgusted by the Nivzeh, the low down person, or is it the other way around, that Nivzeh the verb that he considers disgusting, the Nimas the one who is abhorrent? Okay, whatever. Anyway, that Yireh Hashem Yechavit, but he honors the ones who fear Hashem. Nishba, the number nine, Nishba Lahara, is Nishba Lahara Vala Yomer. He swears to do bad, and he doesn't change it. Number 10, Kasper.
Mishpabahar, right? Where is you bad? Below Yomer, and you have to change it. We'll see. Again, relax. We'll see what all these mean. Number 10, Kasper Lenasa Manesha. He doesn't lend his money at interest. And number 11, Vashokhabar Nafi Lelokach. He doesn't take
bribes against the innocent. And the pasuk finishes, Oysa Elo Lo Yimet La'olam. Somebody who does these will never falter. So that's the 11 things how David summarized or condensed or whatever the mitzvahs under these 11 headings or these 11 basic things that make it possible for a person to keep all the mitzvahs according to the various explanations. So now let's analyze we have to understand what each of these 11 means. We have to understand what each of these things is. Holach tamim ze'avraham.
When we say somebody who goes in tamim,
somebody who goes with tamimus, this refers to Avraham, meaning a person has to behave in that sense, like Avraham. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, he's halach lafanai veheyeh tamim. As Hashem tells him, walk before me and be tamim.
But that's before Matan Torah.
It is before Matan Torah. So what? It means that we can learn from Avraham to have that tamimus. It means that we learn from Hashem to accept unquestioningly whatever Hashem gives us. Like we say, Tamim Tiyayim Hashem Alatacha, that means instead of looking to try and then divine the future or whatever, not Trich Hashem, but instead of trying to divine the future or whatever, we accept the Tmimus, whatever Hashem does for us.
Right.
So that's Avraham. Poyol Tzedek, or the second one, Poyol Tzedek, somebody who acts in righteousness, during Abba Chilkiyahu. An example of that is Abba Chilkiyahu, who the Gemara tells us in Tainus, was extremely honest to the point where he was working. He was a hired laborer. When the Chachamim came to him because they needed him to daven for rain, he wouldn't even interrupt his work for a moment to say Shalom Aleichem to them. And the Gemara goes on.
No, that is a very good meter because it means he was honest to a fault with his work, to his employer. Yeah, his employer is hiring him for work, so he's not going to take time off even to say Shalom Aleichem.
And then later on, the Gemara continues in the story with other things where we see how careful he was. That's where we see how careful he was to a fault with not wasting his employer's money and his own money and whatever. That's Poyol Tzedek. The Dover Emes Bilbal, number 3, the one who speaks truth in his heart, the Kegoin Rav Safra. An example of that would be Rav Safra. What happened with Rav Safra? The Rivan tells a story from Shi'ultas like this. Rav Safra had a store. One time, somebody came to buy something from the store, and at that point, Rav Safra was in the middle of saying Krishna. So the guy asks, I want to buy this thing. I offer so and so much money for it. And Rav Safra, of course, is not going to interrupt in the middle of Shema. The other guy didn't realize that Rav Safra is saying Shema. He thought Rav Safra is not answering because it must be an insultingly low offer. So he offered more and more. Eventually Rav Safra finishes Krishma and he says, no, you can just get it at the original price. When you said that original price, I already made up mentally that, yes, I'm willing to sell it to you at that price, so now I'm not going to go back on that. That's Rav Safra. That he speaks truth in his heart.
One should strive to do that machmir tavor bracha, or is that completely not?
I don't know. I didn't look in the relevant halachas in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, so I'm not sure. Okay. So that's Rav Safra. That's Dover Emes Bovavi. Okay, so that's item number 3. Lord Rogal al Lashonah. Number 4, we said, is the person does not speak Lashon Hara, or does not speak lies. The Yaakov Avinu. This, we see an example of Yaakov Avinu. Dichtiv, where we find when Rivka tells him to go and trick Yitzchak to get the bracha, he says, Ulai Yumosheni Avi, perhaps my father will feel me, and I'm smooth-skinned, I'm like Esau, V'ayisi be'enav kim sateya, and I will be in his eyes like a liar, like a trickster. And I'll get a klala. So we still went, but the point is, so you have a lot of different explanations. The Rivan says the point is, we see he didn't want to lie. He's forced into it by his mother. So therefore, he's an example of Lodoga Lalashona, where he didn't want to speak a lie, and he was forced into it by her.
If you compare to the previous case.
But here, he's told to by his mother, and he has no choice but to listen. But that's only according to the Rivan. You have other explanations as well. Among them are that, The Marsha says, very simple, why does he have to go through this whole charade? Why doesn't he just go and tell Yitzchak straight out, look, you have to give me the brachas because Esav is a lowlife.
Right.
He didn't want to say Lashon Hara against Esav. That's the Lord Ogal of Lashonah. We see from that the fact that Yaakov had to go through this whole trickery rather than just tell straight out, look, Esav is a lowlife, don't give him the brachas, or there's a variation.
He could have come to his mother and said, my mother wants me to give you...
But why? Okay, so that's a different explanation.
Hold on.
That's a different explanation. I think my Rav Chaya said that one. That it means Yaakov didn't want to have to speak Lashon Hara against his mother, that his mother put him up to this. Instead, he. It would be. No, come on. But nevertheless, but still, Yitzchak didn't know that what's going on with Esav. And yes, for him to say, I'm only doing because my mother sent me, then that causes Yitzchak to go and have to ask Rivka what's going on. And therefore, so Yaakov didn't want to have to deal with all of that. And therefore, that's the Lodog al Alashona, that he didn't want to throw Esav under the bus, or he didn't want to throw Rivka under the bus.
If Yitzchak wasn't blind, he wouldn't do it.
This is also true, but okay, the fact is Yitzchak was blind.
No,
if Yitzchak wasn't blind, he wouldn't have been able to. Fine, but that's not the point. The point is, okay, so again, either it's that Yaakov did not want to lie and he's forced into it, or it's that he didn't want to speak Lashon Hara against Esav, or it's that he didn't want to speak Lashon Hara against Rivka. There's other explanations as well. There's another one, which is, I think this one, actually, that I'm going to say now is from the Ramah Ratzchai, it's the previous one not, is Yaakov used the expression Ulai Yimosheni Avi. Now, there's two words in Hebrew that can mean perhaps, or less.
Ulai.
One of them is pen and one of them is ulai.
Yeah.
Pen you use when you don't want it to happen. Ulai you use when you want it to happen. Meaning Yaakov is saying, halavai, ulai yimosheni avi, I wish my father would actually feel and realize the deception and then I won't have to go through with this kind of lying because he didn't want to have to.
That's
another explanation as well. That's it's brought from the Gra, it's brought from the Maharaj Chayas, yeah. There's yet one more, because we can't talk about all the pshatim for each one, but the Aruch HaNer says an interesting one. We all know that you have people, we all know people who are very skilled liars, and we all know people who are not very skilled liars, and we can tell easily because they try to lie, and they trip over their own tongue. Yaakov is like that. So he says, well, you see the Ein of Kim Satea. If I try to lie, I'm not very skilled at it. I don't know how to lie. I'm not going to be able to speak straight. I'm going to be like a Misatea. Hold on. That's the well, you see the Ein of Kim Satea. As soon as I start speaking, he's immediately going to realize from the way I'm hemming and hawing and whatever that I'm tricking him. So we see from that how honest Yaakov was that he never had any experience in lying. Okay, so that's the Lord Og Al Shana. That's Yaakov. Okay. Then we continue also with the Eru Ra. We said number five is he didn't do to his fellow man. What does that mean? Shalayara la'umnus chavere means he didn't go and interfere with somebody else's livelihood, like to open up a competing store or whatever. Now, you have cases in halacha where you're not allowed to. Obviously, we're not talking about the ones that are required off the halacha, because here we're dealing with midas chidus, things, lefnim mishorot adin. But even in cases where you would be legally allowed to, he doesn't. Okay, then the sixth one we said was a chepel in Nosakroiva. We said he did not bear embarrassment because of his relative. It means Zamakarabas Kroiva, means somebody who brings close his relatives. So one meaning of it means, in other words, his relatives, for example, are poor and he helps them out, let's say, so that way he doesn't have to be involved in their embarrassment. Marshall says the voters, if he sees that they're doing wrong, he gets them back on the right path. That way he doesn't have to be embarrassed because of their averus. Because he works on getting them back onto the right path. Number seven, Nivza be'en of Nimos. We said that again, you have different explanations what Nivza means and what Nimos means, whether which one is the adjective and which one is the verb. The Rivan says that Nimos is the adjective and Nivza is the verb. And Nimos, like Kadosh Baruch Hu, somebody who is disgusting in Hashem's eyes, Nivza hu be'en of shal adam zeh. He is degraded in the eyes of this person. The one who's keeping cities alive. So what's an example of that? Zeh Chizkiyahu HaMelech, an example of that is Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Shagir Atmos Ovid B'mita Shochavolim, who dragged his father Ochaz's bones around on a bed made out of ropes. We learned about this in Sanhedrin, that Ochaz had been a Rosha, and therefore Chizkiyahu felt as a matter of to be Mechap partly as a Kapara for what Ochaz has done, to drag him around like that in order that he should have a kapara. But the point is that, first of all, so Ochaz was disgusting to him because he had worshipped Avodah Zarah, so therefore, Chizkiyahu treated him in that contemptible, degrading way. And second of all, it means Chizkiyahu himself was willing to suffer that kind of embarrassment, that people should be saying, look what a son does to his father, that people should be remembering what his father did, all in order to show, to demonstrate that there's zero tolerance for this kind of thing, for people who worship Avodah Zarah, and such a person needs a public kapara. But in this case, his father was a Rasha. The covenant for his father is to give him this kapara. So that's Nivze Be'en of Nimos. That's Yirei Hashem Yechabed. What's an example of when the pasuk continues the eighth midah, that the ones who fear Hashem he honors. Zeh Yehoshafat Melech Yehuda. We have an example of that as Yehoshafat, the king of Yehuda. Shebashar Sheyeroy Tamar Chacham. When he would see a Tamar Chacham, or Yehomin Mikisa, he would stand up from his throne, or Mechabka Yomanashka, and hug him and kiss him, V'kor Eloi, and he would call him Avi Avi, Rebbe Rebbe, Mori Mori. It would honor him greatly. That's Yirei Hashem Yechabed. by the way, that Rambam points out, you're only allowed to do that in private. If you're in public, if you're in the presence of other people, you can't. The king can't be moichel on his covered. But when you're in private, yes, you should be doing like Yair Shaphat does. And Marsha points out, by the way, we can see it from Sukkim. We can see it from Sukkim involving Yair Shaphat, where first in one episode over there, first he's referred to as Melech Yehuda, and afterwards he's just referred to as plain Yair Shaphat, showing like he's foregoing his dignity and just being plain Yair Shaphat when there's a Talmud Chacham there. Why the triple expression, by the way? Why Obi, Rebbe, and Mori? The Oda Choner says that he's saying, Obi, that you gave me life, that the father gives life to his child. Rebbe, that you brought me to Olam Haba. And Mori, that I have respect for you like for the Shechinah. So murder Rabbah, to murder Shemayim, like it says in Pirkei Avos. Nishpa lahara v'layomer. What is the ninth one in the Pasuk is, he swears to do bad and he doesn't change it. What does that mean? Rabbi Yechanan. An example of that would be like what Rabbi Yechanan did. You have examples where, for example, Rabbi Yechanan was being invited by the people of the Nasi's household to eat by them, and he didn't want to for whatever reason. So instead, he would tell them, he would make an excuse that I'm fasting until I get home. But then, so that's Nishba Lahara. He's fasting to do bad to himself, to say he's swearing rather to do bad to himself. But he didn't, it wasn't really, he hadn't really made the teshuva, but nevertheless, he didn't want to hurt their feelings. Nevertheless, though, once he had said such a thing, he followed through with any taka, continued his tainus until he got home. That's Nishba Lahara. But Lo Yomer, he doesn't change his words, even though he only said it as an excuse to get out of a social obligation or whatever. By the way, I read a somewhat similar story about closer to our times about the Yaakov Kamenetsky. In general, by the Litvaks, of whom Rabbi Yaakov was one, they usually eat gebrachs. We sit him down, but the Litvaks do. However, when he was a yeshiva bacher and it was Essen Teg, you know, they had the famous thing where bacherim eats at different days by different balabasim. One time during Pesach, it was assigned to a certain balabas whose kashrus was a little iffy. So he tells the guy, I can't eat over here because I don't eat gebrachs. And then he continued for the rest of his life. He didn't eat gebrachs on Pesach because he had said that. Same idea.
Number 10,
we said number 10, he didn't give away lend his money at Ribbis. Now, on the face of it, that's a mitzvah in the Torah. You shouldn't be in this list of 11 things that you don't get praised for that, right? And it shouldn't be in this list of 11 broad categories or midas siddus or whatever. So it means, afilu b'ribbis ovid kachavim. It means not even to lend at Ribbis to a goy, even though technically you're allowed to, but he doesn't do that. We learned in Bava Metzia that actually in some cases that Abana made a takana that you're not allowed to in general because they didn't want you to get too close with the goyim, and you learn from him that even in cases where it is mutter, for example, like Moses says, if I'm allowed to, such a person stays away even from that.
Doesn't the Torah say benoch you could?
The Torah says that enough for you could, but nevertheless, the person like this is careful that he's being careful himself with Nimashur of the day. The Sheikhad al Naki Lalakach, and last one, we said he doesn't take Sheikhad against an innocent person. What would be an example? Again, that's something that's also a mitzvah. Yeah. It means to go in Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. It means like the example of Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, where we have a story in Ksubot that his own oris, his own sharecropper, used to bring him usually a basket of fruit from his own orchard every Erev Shabbos. One time the guy shows up on Thursday instead. Rabbi Shmuel asks him, how come you're early? He says, I have a din Torah. So Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, A, refuses to accept the food. You're bringing it to me early because you have a din Torah. That's questionable. And number two, I don't want to be your dayan in the food. I don't want to be your dayan at all because there's a possibility that maybe now I've been swayed towards you by that. And he recuses himself and has somebody else. And then the Gemara continues over there, actually. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi overhears what's going on during the din Torah and starts thinking to himself, you know, the guy should really be using such and such arguments. And he realizes to himself, look, this wasn't even really shaychad. And already it has such an effect on my thought process. How much more so if I'd taken it? That's for Sheikh al-Nafi al-Laqa, that he goes to the ultimate, to the extreme, not to even do such a thing. Ordinarily, he took an Erev Shabbos, it was his own orchard. It was his own orchard. But here, the guy's bringing it on Thursday, he's bringing it a day early, and he says, I'm bringing it early because I'm anyway in town for a din Torah, then there Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi didn't want to take it. All right. So the Pasuk finishes off. It says, so now the Pasuk finishes off. Somebody who does these things, these 11 things, will never stumble. So now when Ram Gamliel would reach this pasuk and tell him, Hoya Boicha, he would cry. Omar, he would say to him, Manda Ovid Lo Lakulu. So what does that mean? Only if a person does all these 11 things, which are very high levels, is not going to be, is never going to stumble. What does that imply? And if a person only does some of them, he is going to stumble, he is going to falter. So they answered him. I think elsewhere the Gemara says it was actually Rabbi Akiva tells him, Miksiv Oise Kol Eila. After all, does the pasuk say anybody who does all of these? It doesn't say the word all. Oise Eila Ksiv. It says somebody who does these. Meaning after Lubachodaminai, even somebody does one of these things, already he has a great school. And after all, because if you're not going to say like that, look at a different pasuk that says Alti Tamu B'chol Eila. You have by Parashas Arayis, it says don't become tame with all of these. B'chol Eila, what does that mean? Hasam Nami and Gei B'chol Eila Hu D'Matame. So what does it mean? Okay, if it's talking about Shrotim, the Gemara seems the gears that we have over here is combining like two different pasukim, one that talks about Arayis and one that talks about touching Shrotim. So whatever, what does it mean? A person who becomes only a person who does all of these or touches all of these Shrotim becomes tame. And if a person touches only one sheretz or does only one arayas, he's not tame. Ella lav ba'achat mikol ela. Obviously, kol over there does not mean all; it means any. We've talked about before whether the word kol can mean all or whether it can mean any. So in a similar thing, hachanami ba'achat mikol ela, the same thing. A person does oise ela, somebody who does of these, meaning any of these, is already a great mile. Okay. So that was David's 11. Bar Yeshayahu, now fast forward a couple hundred years, that people are on an even lower level than David's time, Yeshayahu came to Hamidin al Sheish and summarized them under six things.
Under which king was he?
But Yeshayahu was in the times of, his Nebuahs were in the times of Uzziah, Yotam, Ahaz, and Chizkiah. Four kings, four successive kings of Yehoiada.
Uzziah, Ahaz,
Uzziah, Yotam, Ahaz, and Chizkiah. So his period of Nevuah began like 300 or so years after David HaMelech. So by now the people had gone on a lower level. Now even the 11 things of David are too much for them. So Yeshayahu, we summarize them as six. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, somebody who walks in righteousness. And again, we're going to explain what phrase by phrase what each of these is. The Dovah of Tikus. Tzedakah, says there's a lashon in the pasuk. Holach tzedakah, the dover meisharim, somebody who speaks straightly. Moyes bebetza mashakas, he abhors, he's repulsed by the gain of mashakas, of taking illegally from somebody or taking unfairly, let's say, from somebody. That's the third. Noyer kap of mitmoch b'sheichad, he shakes his hands free of holding on to sheichad. Number five, Otim Ozne Mishmaya Damim. He stops up his ears from hearing blood. And number six, number six, that he closes his eyes from seeing evil. So what do those six things mean? So again, we're going to give examples of people who had each of these six midas. By the way, the Maharal points out these six, each one of them has to do with a different aver of the body. Holich tzedakos is with the feet, dover meisharim with the mouth, and therefore the idea is so it includes the totality of the body. These six summarize what a person does, all the various mitzvahs that a person has to do with all their different limbs. Holich tzedakos is Avraham Avinu. The example of somebody who walks in righteousness is Avraham Avinu. Zichtiv ki yadativ, Hashem says, I know him and I appreciate him. L'man asher yitzav avagun, because he commands his family that they should go in the way of Hashem. L'achas tzedakos u'mishpah. So therefore, Holich Tzedakos is somebody who acts in that sense like Avraham. The Dover Mishorim, what does it mean? Somebody who speaks in a straight way. Zeshein Emachnit Pnei Chaveira Barabim, this is somebody who does not upset somebody else in public to speak to him in a way that would embarrass him or that would get him angry or whatever. Even if he has to give him Musa or whatever, he does it privately, in a way that won't embarrass him. Moyes Bebetza Mashakas, the third one that we say that he's repulsed by any gain that would take away that would be unfair to somebody else. Going to Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. An example of that is Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. In that same Gemara in Ksubas, we're talking over there about Shosad, it tells a story involving him. He was a Kohen. One time a guy comes to him with Matnes Kohuna, with Reishis Agin. Rabbi Shmuel asked him to where you're from. He mentions a certain city. Well, that's far away. You didn't have any other Kohen from there till now to give this Reishis Agez to. So the guy says, I had to come into town for a din Torah. I figured I'll give it to you, and then you'll judge my din Torah. And again, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha didn't want to hear, didn't refuse the Reishis Hagez, and didn't want to hear the din Torah. The point is, here it's Mashakos in the sense that, unlike in the previous case, Rabbi Shmuel ben Yossi, it was his fruit. He is entitled to it. He's not taking it away illegally from anybody else. Here, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, and this is, by the way, this is the regular Rabbi Shmuel who augurs Rabbi Akiva all the time, the Chaver of Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, his point was, I don't want to accept this because it's unfair to the other Kayin. The Pashtus, you have a regular Kayin who you give all your Matnas Kohana to. All of a sudden, you're bypassing him and coming to me because you figured you're coming here for a Din Torah anyway. I don't want to accept it under those circumstances. That's the best of my Shakas, where I'd be wronging the other Kayin by taking it from him, where instead you should be giving it to him as you usually do.
Mashakas in this sense.
Mashakas is more from Oshik. You're taking something, you're wronging somebody else. You're taking from somebody else wrongly.
As usually, yeah. The meaning of Mashakas is.
And that's what it means. Oshik means withholding something that's not supposed to be yours or whatever. Yeah. No, that would be Mash, yeah, without the ayin. The shorash of ma'ashakos is ayin shin kuf, oshek, which means wronging somebody. Oshakos amisoi, like in the end of Parashat Vayikra, yeah. Okay. Noya kapov mitzmoch b'shoichad, the next one that we said that he shakes his hands loose from holding on to shoichad. What is an example? Gren Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi is, again, the example of Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi before with a basket of fruit where he doesn't even want to have anything to do with it, even though it's his own fruit. What does it mean? Somebody who stops up his ears from hearing bloodshed means that it never happens that he hears somebody making fun of a young Talmud Chacham, the Shosik, and he's quiet. He doesn't do that. Always, if he hears somebody making fun of a Tzurva Merabbanan, he'll speak up and protest. And an example is Kegon Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. An example of that is Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, where we have the story in Bava Metzia that after he died, so we learned over there that the his body was in his attic for many years until the Chacham finally got wind of it and then had him buried. But meanwhile, his body still remained intact until one time his wife sees that there's a bug, a worm crawling out of his ear. And that night, Rabbi Elazar comes to her in a dream and explains to her what happened. Is one time during my lifetime, I heard Zelusa the Tzurva Merabbanan, and I heard people making fun of a young Talmud Chacham. I didn't say anything. So that was now, this is why this happened now. The implication, though, is that every other time he was always careful about it. That's the Rivan says. Therefore, the Eved was machped on him specifically. One time he failed to do that, then he got the worm crawling out of his ear, implying that all the other times he was always careful about it. So that's an example. That's what it means. That's what it means. Oitim oznim b'shmaya.
This
is Rav Elazar Rav Shimon.
Rashbi's son.
The Rav Shimon Ben Chai's son. Yeah. Okay. And the last one, va'oitim einav mira'os bara, was the sixth one that he closes his eyes from seeing evil. That means kidrabchia ba'aba. This means in the sense that Rabchia ba'aba explained it. The Amr of Chiyah Ba'aba, Zeh She'enim Estakal B'noshim B'Shar She'em Nesal HaKvisa. This refers to a person who doesn't look at women while they're doing their laundry. In those times, where would you do laundry? By a river or a pond or whatever. They'd have to hitch up their skirts and roll up their sleeves so they don't get them too wet while they're doing the laundry. So therefore, it wasn't sneezed. And in fact, the Gemara talks about in Bava Basra, we may even be talking about, if you're talking about a person who has a different way of going, the Gemara discusses in Bava Basra, then for sure, you're obligated to go on a different road to Lachila. You don't even have a Hava Amina looking at them. But even if you have no other road to go, of necessity, you have to walk by this river. Nevertheless, we're talking about over here a person who closes his eyes, so he doesn't have to see it at all.
He's not very wet if he falls into the river.
Okay, so he'll get wet. He's willing to take that chance rather than looking at something unsneezed. So those are the six things that Yishaya lists. And then he continues, Uchtiv, and next pasuk continues, such a person, who meroimim yishka, and such a person will dwell in the heights. So therefore we see that Yishaya re-summarized the Torah under these six headings. Next, Ba Micha, later on Micha comes. Micha was a junior contemporary of Yishaya. He was also a Navi in that period. His Nebuah began a little bit later in the times of King Yosam, whereas Yishaya had begun in the times of Uzziyahu, Yosam's father. But Micha came along, so now you're talking a half a generation after Yishaya.
What's the Micha that brings about the Zohar?
That's a different Micha. That's Pesach Micha. You're talking about the Machshavah. Yeah, this is Micha in the middle of the first base Mikdash. The Hamidan al Sholosh, and he placed the Torah on a footing of three. Again, he re-summarized the Torah under three headings, or he said, instead of six, yeah, because the people have gone even further down. So he re-summarized it under three headings.
Which king was that?
Micha was in the times of Yosam, Achaz, and Chizkiah. So again, they're not the last kings, but they're among the middle kings of Europe. Yosem was a tzaddik, Achaz was a rasha, Chizkiya was a tzaddik, but yeah. So again, it's the same thing as with the 11 that David did. Doesn't mean that we're talking the headings that all the mitzvahs go under. Are we talking about things that a person needs to be careful with these things, and through them he'll be able to keep the whole Torah? Are we talking about that a person can keep these things and that'll give him the shleimus that he would get from keeping the Torah, etc.? All the various explanations of the whole. So what are the three? As the pasuk says, Higid l'cha adam matov, man has told you what is good. Uma Hashem dorish mincha, so what does Hashem demand of you? Meaning, Maharsha says, the point of this is, these are things which human logic would tell us are appropriate things to do, but we keep them not because of human logic, but because Hashem tells us that they're the right things to do. And what are they? Ki masos mishpat, to do justice, va'avas chesed, and to love kindness, va'hatznei aleches im alekecha, and to walk in tznius with Hashem. So what do these three things mean? Asos mishpat zadin. Saying, doing justice, this refers to the din. Means the actual dinim, following the actual dinim that have to be done. Avas chesed zegmilas chasadim. The second one, loving chesed, refers to doing gmilas chasadim. And v'asnei aleches, z'haitzas ames v'achnosas kala. And the third one, ha'asnei aleches, means acting in a sneistic way when it comes to haitzas ames, when it comes to a levaya, v'achnosas kala, and weddings. Well, specifically these two, because, one second, v'haloi dvorim kavachoymer. So now we can make a kavachoymer. U'ma dvorim she'en da'ukan lapsos in the sinah, madach these kinds of things, like a funerals and weddings, which are not usually done in a private way, they're done very much in public, and yet Omer Torah v'asnei aleches, and the Torah says you have to do it in a sneistic way, which means, among other things, Rashi mentions in the Gemara is also in Sukkah. Rashi mentions over there, it means, for example, that you keep things under control. When it comes to a levaya, it means you're not overwhelmed by your grief, you keep it within bounds. When it comes to a simcha, you're not going giddy or whatever. That's one part of asnei aleches. Dvarim shadarkan lasayis in the sinner. Well, then other things that are usually done in private, alachas kama v'kama. How much more so that you have to have asnei aleches when it comes to those?
Do you need kavachemel to
that's it. Yeah, that's why we mentioned it. So after mesvach nasas kala, and from that we can deduce to everything else. Chazor Yeshayahu v'amidin al shnayim. Next, Yeshayahu later on came. Yeshayah had a long career. His career, as we just said, of Nevuah was spanned the reigns of four kings of Yehuda, altogether about 80 years or so. So sometime, So now, at some point, he had to reduce it down to two from his original six. Shenema, the positive says, Koyam Hashem shimru mishpat v'asu tzedakah. Hashem says, keep justice and do tzedakah. Which means, the Maharal says, it means basically acting according to the din and acting with nimishirat din. That the mishpat is the din and tzedakah is going with nimishirat din. That's they're re-summarizing the whole Torah under those two headings. But almost v'hamidin alachas, later on then almost, who was also a contemporary of Yeshayah's, came and summarized them on one. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Koyam Hashem aveis Yisrael, so says Hashem to the house of Yisrael, Dirshuni, seek me, v'chiyu, and you'll live. So the question is, what does seek me mean? Maskevot or not meitzot? Eimer dirshuni b'chol atorah kula. Who says that? That means you have one general principle. Maybe the word dirshuni means seek Hashem through the entire Torah, through all the mitzvahs. So that's not summarizing it under one thing. Ella, no. We have to understand, it wasn't almost b'chavakos that did malachas. Rather, chavakos, who was in the next generation, he was in the times of King Manasseh, the son of Chizkiyahu, he came and summarized it as one principle. Shenema, the tzaddik b'emunah yichya, the tzaddik lives through his emunah. Here, yeah, the Alter Rebbe talks about in Perek Lamed Gimel of Tanya, the idea, what this means is that a person should feel as if there is only the one mitzvah of Emunah, and have an excitement about that, and through that he'll be able to overcome all of the things that prevent him from doing the other mitzvahs and be able to tackle serve Hashem with all the mitzvahs. So that's what it means. Tzadik b'emunah yichyeh. He enlivens himself through his Emunah in that the Eibishter created him and put him in the world for a purpose to make a deal with that. Through that he's able to do all the other mitzvahs. Yeah. Amr of Yesu Bachanina. Arab of Zeres, God of Moshe Rabbeinu al Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu declared four Zeres regarding the Jewish people. Bo Nevi'im u'bitlum. And then four Nevi'im came along and were mevatel them. Now, what do you mean? How are Nevi'im able to be mevatel what Moshe Rabbeinu says? So there are many different explanations. One explanation, I think the Maharal says, is Moshe is talking the Tzadmidis Adin. This is how it ought to be. The later Nevi'im are saying, realistically, the people are not on that level. Therefore, we can't hold them to that kind of standard.
Do you know if the Haskalah movement latched onto this guy?
No.
To this Gomorrah?
No, because...
Maybe they say, hey, look. The Nevi'im were Mavakar was.
No.
Now we can do it.
I don't think so.
How do they do it?
So we'll see as we go through. But so that's one idea, is that Moshe is talking the way it should be, and the Nevi'im are talking about realistically how it is. There's a lot of other explanations, but I'll mention also there are three times that Eber made a siyum on Masechet Makkos. Mm-hmm. One of them in Chaf Hei, one in Chaf Ches, and one in Lamed Dal. So in one of them in Chaf Ches, that Eber addressed this Gemara in some detail. What is the meaning? How does Moshe make Xeris against the Jewish people? And what do we mean by Xeris anyway? Usually Xeris would be to uphold halacha or whatever. How are these things that we're going to list have anything to do with halacha? And what does it mean that the Nevi'im were Mavasa then? When we make the Siyum, Bez Hashem, and I'm hoping that we'll make the Siyum at the Fabrengen of Yutas Kislev, it'll actually be exactly 50 years since that Fabrengen, because it was Yutas Kislev Chokhet, and we will, Bez Hashem, talk about it then.
No.
First of all, from Yutas Kislev Chokhet until Chof of Lamadala was the next Siyum on Makkos, is 6.5 years later. No, neither of them seems to have been right around the time they were doing it in Daf Yomi, so I don't know. But, yeah. Anyway, so what are the four Gzeiros? Number one, Moshe Omer Vayishken Yisrael Betach Badad Ein Yaakov. Moshe said the Jewish people will dwell securely Ein Yaakov, will dwell securely alone, Badad means alone, Ein Yaakov, in the way like Yaakov, which implies, in other words, well, Ein means like Ka'en in Gemara Lashon. So it means, in other words, the Rivon explains that Moshe is saying, when will the Jewish people be able to dwell securely when they are tzaddikim on the level of Yaakov? But almost the bitlot. And now almost came and was after that. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Chadono miyakum Yaakov agayma. He says, withhold this. Who can stand up and be like Yaakov? Who can be a chassid like Yaakov? And the pasuk continues, ki katan hu, because he's small, meaning there's not that many people who are on the level that can be tzaddikim like Yaakov. And even the next pasuk says, Micham Hashem alzeitzah. Hashem, so to speak, regretted that and said, okay, loisakum, you're right, it's not going to be that way. Marsha explains that he changed the Gzeira, therefore. Marsha explains it a little bit differently, that Yaakov, we know in general, we have those two names for the Jewish people, Yaakov and Yisrael. Yaakov when we're on a lower level, and Yisrael when we're on the higher level. So Moshe is saying that when the Jewish people are in Yaakov, when they're at the level of Yaakov as opposed to Yisrael, then they're going to be Badad, they're going to be alone, as in solitary, like Echa Yoshva Badad. And almost comes and says that how do you expect, are people really going to be able to rise above the level of Yaakov all the time? And Hashem says, you're right, I accept that argument, and then therefore it's not going to be that way.
It's because they're going to be Badad, and then...
According to Marsha's explanation, because they're only at the level of Yaakov, the lower level, therefore they end up with the punishment of Badad, of being solitary, Echa Yoshva Badad, instead of being on the level of Yisrael, whereas almost argued against that. The second one is Moshe Omo Vagoy Mahim Loisagia. Moshe says in the Tochacha in Parshas Yisavei, among those nations, when you go into Golos, you will not have any rest. Vayumi of Omo Holech Vagia Yisrael. Whereas Yumiya comes and says, the Jewish people have gone and they will have their rest. Even during Golos, they will have a period. They will have periods of rest. Periods of rest. Yeah, doesn't mean all the time. Of course not. But yeah. By the way, over here, if you notice over here, until now we had Rivon. From here to for the next half an hour, we don't have Rivon anymore. Now we have Rabbeinu Gershon.
Who is Rivon?
The Rivon was the son-in-law and one of the sons-in-law of Rashi and one of his talmidim.
And this is his grandson.
No, Rabbeinu Gershon is Rashi's Rebbe's Rebbe.
Oh, the Rashbam is his grandson.
Yeah, the Rashbam is another grandson. Rashi. Okay. All right. So that's the second. The third one, Moshe Amar Poked Avon Avoyis Albanim. Moshe said that Hashem remembers the Averis of the fathers for the children. In other words, that Hashem punishes the children as for the residue of the averus of their fathers. So now Yechezkel came and canceled it by saying, the soul that sins, that'll be the one that dies. The person doesn't get punished for the residual averus of their father. Yes, but that doesn't mean in that sense. That means, as far as we learned in Sanhedrin, means volumes of the edus one. It means that you don't punish fathers with mitzvahs based in based on the edus of their children.
But also
indeed, but even say be a day, and even when the children follow in the ways of their fathers, the Yechezkel is saying that it shouldn't be that way. That
makes such a mistake. The son would pay for the parents.
So one idea of it is, again, Chosin Ma'aseh say be a day, when they're following in the footsteps of their fathers and doing the same averus, then they not only get punished for themselves. They were averus, but it's also the fact that they inherited from their fathers. Whereas Yechezkel was saying, we're not doing that anymore. From now, we're having a nefesh achoyta sitah.
And that's really, it happened this way?
Apparently, we're saying that the Nevi'im came and we're about all these things. So, yeah. In that Hadron of the Rebbe's from Chof Ches, which, like I say, we'll get into the details in a few days, Be'ez Hashem, he talks about the idea. Some of these things were saying that the later Nevi'im, the Omar, and some of them are saying Bithla. We said Ba'omar is Bithla, the first one, but the second one we said Yirmiyah said. The third one now we're saying Yechezkel was Mevatel, and the fourth one again was going to say said. And the Rebbe explains the idea is the ones that we say they're Mevatel means they said it's not going to be like that anymore. The Omar ones were saying, in general, it's not going to be like that, but there are going to be exceptions. So here, Yechezkel is saying, according to that, that from now on, it's never going to be that way. You're never going to have Poked Ovid Ovid Zavon. You're always going to have a Nefesh Chotis Yitam. And the fourth one, Moshe Omar Vavad to Magoy, Moshe says you will be lost among the nations. Bo Yishayo Omar. So now Yishayo comes and says, no, Vahoya Bayemahu, you talk of the Shofar God. On that day, when Mashiach comes, the great Shofar will be blown, and Uvoa Obdim Be'eretz Asher, those who are lost in the land of Asher will come. So they won't be lost. They won't be lost among the Goyim.
But that was about the Goyim. When Hashem was angry, he said that.
Fine, this is also the story about Golos, but eventually the Golos will be over and everybody will be gathered in. Meaning, in other words, was one idea is, obviously we're not talking about the Jewish people collectively. Even before Yeshaya came along, we knew there was going to be a Geula. But we're talking about individual people might get lost among the Goyim, Ba'avad to Magoyim, including particularly the people who die in Golos. Whereas Yeshaya is saying, even they will have a comeback. They'll still have a comeback. Lost in love. They're not going to be completely lost.
Some will not, as we saw.
We learned in Sanhedrin that we talked about that letter from the Rebbe to Stockhammer that even the people who we think Aimlam Chelik Olam Haba, the vast majority of them are eventually going to have a Chelik Olam Haba somehow or other. And even the few maybe who don't manage to make it, their neshamas will make it just in a different body. Over Rav, so in this connection, Rav says, I'm scared about this pasuk, Va'avadta Magoyim, you'll be lost among the nations. Does that mean that there are going to be Jews who are going to be lost forever, Chas v'Shalom? Mark for a papa, however, a papa asks on that, what are you so worried about? Maybe it means they'll be lost, but then they'll be like a lost object, which is being searched for by its owner, and eventually is found. Yeah, Shabbat Aveda. No, you have a pasuk. I've been lost like a wandering sheep. Bakesh avdecha, look, search for your servant.
So are we referring in a way to the aseret hashvatim?
It could be the aseret hashvatim. It could be in general Jews who were assimilated over time, but eventually they'll be picked out and then brought back. In fact, Marshall points out in this connection, there's also the Sikha and Chelik Aleph, where the Rebbe addresses this, there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia that mentions, when we talk, the Pasuk, when it talks about Hashavas Aveda, mentions a few different animals, V'chein Tatsu L'Shode, V'chein Tatsu L'Simlasa, etc., and it mentions a Seh over there.
That's a different
Pasuk. But so you have it mentions of in that connection that you find a Seh, you see your brothers, you see your fellow Jews, Shor or Seh lost, and the Gemara discusses in Bava doesn't see why it needs to mention each of these animals, and it ends up saying over there that actually there's no good. We can't really find a good reason why it mentions the set. Said Aveda is a kasha. Why the pasuk has to mention it? Because whatever it is, we can learn about it. We can learn from the other animals mentioned. So Marsha explains it in connection with this gemara over here. That the answer is why is the set mentioned to represent what we're saying over here? That even if we're like a set over it, even if we're like a lost sheep, eventually the Eved looks for among the 70 nations. Eventually Hashem looks for us and finds them. Okay.
Yes.
Elam is safer to cross. So no, the question is, so what is Rav saying he's scared about? Okay, but what about the end of the pasuk? For Ochla Eschem Eretz Eivechem, the pasuk continues, the land of your enemies will eat you up. In other words, you'll be consumed. So he's afraid about that. However, Mazutra asks on that also, what are you so worried about? Maybe it means they'll be eaten in the same way that cucumbers and pumpkins are eaten. So there's many different explanations among Mephoshim what it means. It means that when you eat them, you have the peel and the seeds left over. So therefore, in other words, like it's not completely lost, especially the seeds eventually grow into new plants. The Aruch HaNer says the vort is that with most kinds of plants, you pick the entire crop. When you pick cucumbers and pumpkins or whatever, you don't pick all of them. You always leave some behind that the next year's crop will grow from. And the same way, it means there'll always be some of us left. And the Maharal says a similar thing. These are very large vegetables. You don't eat them all in one sitting. So this is representing the idea that there'll always be some of us left.
But it doesn't help too much.
So therefore, we're not going to be completely consumed. Depends. That's what we mentioned. Kishurin is loin, because those are very large ones that don't get eaten in one sitting, and the seeds of them are left, and so forth.
But it happened. It's a prophecy that became true.
A lot of us have been.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of us have been consumed, but we're still here. We're still here. Okay. Now, it also happened, on the face of it, what do we mean that it also happened? Some of the Mephoshim talk about, in the same way that we just described, that there were these Xeris of Moshe, which these four Nevi'im came in and were Mevatel, in the same way we're going to talk about two nevuos that are interdependent, where one of them sort of, so to speak, cancels out the other. So kvar hayu Rav Gamliel v'Rav Elazar ben Azariah v'Rav Yeshua v'Rav Akiva m'halchen v'aderech. It already happened that Rav Gamliel and Rav Elazar ben Azariah and Rav Yeshua and Rav Akiva were walking on the road. V'shamu kol hamona shel roim mipalta, and they heard the sound of the noise of the crowds of Rome from Palta. One explanation of Palta is that it means Mimpetilus is the name of a city in Italy, which where the port was. So they were traveling from there, and already they could hear the noise of Rome. Berichuk meyer v'estri mil, 120 mil away, a mil being about a kilometer, a little over 3/5 of a mile. So you're talking something like 70 miles away. They could already hear the noise and the tumult of Rome. The rest of the Chachamim started crying. Rabbi Akiva started laughing. They asked him, what are you laughing? He says to them, why are you guys crying? They said to him, what do you mean, why are we crying? These goyim who worship idols, and they offer incense to Avodah Zarah, they're sitting peacefully and securely. The honor, and it's for us, based Hadoim Ragle Alakenu Sorokwesh, the house of the footstool of Hashem is burnt in fire.
Right.
Shouldn't we be crying?
So
he answers them, Chachani Mesachek. That is exactly why I'm smiling and laughing. Because Umala over it, so you have to realize if this is how much good Hashem gives to those who violate what he wants, how much greater will be the reward for those who do what Hashem wants. So how is it an answer? But I'll tell you, there is actually in one of the Rebbe's Hadronim on this Masechta, this is the one from Chofei, I think, the Rebbe talks about what it is like this. When we say that these four Chachamim already were walking on the road, means they're walking, that they're going to Rome, means they're going, they're working on Avodas HaBirurim. They're going to Rome, the place of ultimate Tumah in the world in those days, and then working on being Mevarim. The problem is true. Yeah, the Avodas HaTumah is there. This is true. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, So they're going there, fine. They know they have a job to do. But when they're 120 mil away, they're already hearing the noise of it, in the sense, like, the noise of that is drowning out the sparks of Kedusha that they're here to get. They're being drowned out by that noise that's extending so far out, 120 mil. By the way, Reb Levick points out an interesting thing in Teres Levi Yitzchak. He says the gematria of Roimi plus 120 is the gematria of Esau. Therefore, that's why the effect of Rome spreads out 120 mil. Anyway, so therefore they start crying, like, what is this? Here we're supposed to be doing Avodah Sabirurim, and here it's being drowned out by the noise and the tumult of Rome.
They're in the ship when they're here.
You know? No, they're on dry land, the pastures at this point, but whatever. Anyway, so Rabbi Akiva explains that, and they say the footstool of Hashem is burned, in the sense, like, look at how many mitzvahs that we're lacking because the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. For the mitzvahs are Hashem's footstool in the world. So Rabbi Akiva explains to them, okay, but you have to realize that in that case, what's happening here is all out of proportion to what should be logical. There's no logical reason why it should be that Ovri the Sono should be having such tremendous hatzlacha to the point where it seems to be drowning out the Kedusha in the world. It can only be that it means, when it comes to the reward for the Jewish people, that's also going to be completely out of proportion to what you would expect. That's the answer. That's the answer he's giving them. Shuv pa'am achasoy olam liYerushalayim. Then there was another time they were going up to Yerushalayim. Kivin shi'igiyu laHaratzofim kodeh b'gdeihim. When they reached Haratzofim, which is the first point at which you can see the Harabayis, they tore their clothes, as is the halacha when you see the
when did they go back?
When did they go back? At some point during their lives, they went back. I don't know.
Tuesday.
Sure. Okay. So they tore their clothes as is required by halacha. Kivin shi'igiyu laHaratzofim, when they reached the actual Harabayis. They saw a fox running out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Again, they started crying, and Rabbi Akiva was smiling. So they say to him, why are you smiling? They knew, why are you crying? They said, what do you mean, why we're crying? This is a place on which it says that a Zor who comes close to there will die because of the Kedusha of it. Now you have foxes running around in it, like it says in the Pasuk. Again, you think we shouldn't cry? So he says to them, yes, but you have to understand that is exactly why I'm smiling. Because you have a Pasuk like this. Well, a Pasuk in Yeshaya, where he says, I make for myself trustworthy witnesses. It's either the Navi is talking or Hashem is talking, different explanations among the Mepharshim, whatever. I'm making for myself trustworthy witnesses. Es Uriah Koyen vs Zechariah ben Yerachiyahu. Uriah the Koyen and Zechariah ben Yerachiyahu. Now these are, on the simple pshat, you would say these are people who lived in Yeshaya's times. But the Gemara is understanding that not. These are people who we know from other places in Tanakh. So v'chimain in Uriah etzel Zechariah. What does Uriah have anything to do with Zechariah? Uriah b'mikdash rishon and Zechariah b'mikdash sheni. Uriah was a Navi who lived in the times of Yirmiyahu. So the Pasuk describes in Sefer Yirmiyahu, it tells how at one point Yirmiyahu was saying Nevorot, well, for a long time he was saying Nevorot, about you better do tshuva or the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed and everybody's going into Galus. At one point, the people accuse him, you're a Navi Sheker, we should execute you. And in that connection, the people point out, look, you had Micha Navi, the Micha that we learned from Amud Aleph, who said similar Nevorot, and nobody bothered him. Then the Pasuk goes on to say that Uriah, another Navi named Uriah said similar Nevuahs during this period of Yirmiyahu. And the Pasuk ends up saying that this Uriah who had escaped to Egypt because they wanted to kill him, and then they schlepped him out of Egypt and brought him back to Eretz Yisrael and killed him. That's Uriah. So he had said Nevuahs that the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed. And Zechariah ben Yerachiyahu is one of the Nevi'im at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. So what do they have to do with each other? What do you mean that they're two Edim together? What it means is, therefore, it means the Pasuk makes the Nevuah of Zechariah depend on the Navi of Uriah, on the Nevuah of Uriah. So what are their respective Nevuahs? By Uriah, it says like this, therefore, because of you, Avedis, Yerushalayim, the Smithers, will be plowed up like a field. Now, in the Pesukim over there, it doesn't actually say in so many words that Uriah says this. It says that Micha said this. But the Pasuk continues that, the Tosfos points out, the Pasuk continues over there that it says that Uriah said similar Nevuahs. So therefore, we can attribute these words to Uriah as well. If he didn't say the exact words, he said the substance of it, a similar thing. So the Techarish Yerushalayim would plowed up like a field. Which tack happened? One of the five things that we mourn on Tisha B'Av is Nefesh HaHeichel, that Turnus Ruch was plowed up the area of the area of the Beit Mikdash. B'Zecharia Ksiv, where it's in Zecharia's Nevuah, at the beginning of the second Beit Mikdash, it says, Oyd Yesh Wuzkenim Wuzkenis Berchoves Yerushalayim. Eventually, there'll be a time that old men and women will sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. And in particular, actually, Mepharshim point out, Marsha points out briefly, based on a Gemara in Psachim, that this is also that actually Tosfos pointed out rather that it doesn't just mean the simple thing that there'll be old people sitting in the street. It's also a remnant of Tchias Amesim. That the old people will be sitting with their staffs. The pasuk continues, like Elisha used the staff to be Mechai Amesim.
Who said that?
Tosfos brings that. So Rabbi Akiva says, Adjlan is Skaim and Nevuah Sishal Uriah, until Uriah's Nevuah came true, Hayisim is Yadosh let the Skaim Nevuah Sishal Tzchaya. I was afraid that Tzchaya's Nevuah might not come true. What do you mean not come true? I mean, it's a Nevuah, it has to come true. But who says it's going to come true in the literal sense? Who says it's going to come true in our time? Achshav Shin is Skaim and Nevuah Sishal Uriah, but now that Uriah's Nevuah has been fulfilled, that Yerushalayim has been plowed up, and then that there are foxes running around now we know that Zechariah's Nevuah will be fulfilled in the simple sense, that it'll actually happen, and then that it'll actually happen, that it's not Marsha adds a nuance to this also. He says, what's the vote that they
call?
Beloshen HaZeh is the last thing, wait. That Zechariah's Nevuah will be fulfilled. So Marsha adds a nuance over here. We're saying that they saw foxes are running around over there. What Rabbi Akiva is telling them like this is, you're upset that there are foxes running around over here, but wouldn't it be much worse if there were goyim running around over here? It's so completely destroyed. It's like a field that see in Sadat Techarish. It's like a field that was plowed up and not planted. There's nothing there. That itself is a siman that eventually the Jewish people are going to be returning over there because the goyim are not going to be the goyim. Don't manage over there.
The fact that there are foxes
meaning that's an abandoned as opposed to goyim. Yeah.
Not come there. Yes.
Shows that the prophecy of Zechariah, therefore, means that eventually Yerushalayim is going to be restored to the Jewish people in the times of Mashiach. Yeah. And by the way, I mean, so nowadays, unfortunately, you do have goyim running around there. Although it is interesting. Well, I'm talking about on the Har HaBayis, but it is interesting that there are. It's not usually everybody says that the Dome of the Rock is built over the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There are many people who argue that not. That as a matter of fact, the Kodesh HaKadoshim is elsewhere on the present day Har HaBayis, and therefore that's not covered up at all, and you don't
between
have
the two mosques.
Between the two mosques or further east or whatever it is. Yeah. So yeah. Beloshen Azeh Amrulai. So then, they used the following expression to answer him. They said, "Akiva nechamtonu, Akiva nechamtonu. Akiva, you've comforted us. Akiva, you've comforted us." Why the double expression? So Marshall says it's referring back to the previous story as well. The previous story, when he gave his statement about Ogir Sona and Osir Sona, they didn't react. Now they're reacting to both and saying, "You've comforted us," in connection with the two stories.
And it also means nechamtonu for both temples.
Maybe, but maybe. There was a different sikha in Chedek Yotes, or the Hadron from Lama Dalad, where the Rebbe talks about that it's connected with the double Nechama, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, the double Nechama, so over here, Akiva Nechamtanu, Akiva Nechamtanu. In the one from Chof Hei, the Rebbe talks about the idea behind the story is, so they did their Avodas Abirurim, as in the previous story. Now they're coming to, okay, on our level, we're already ready to come back to Yerushalayim and for the Beit HaMikdash to be rebuilt. But they see, in other words, we're going to try to raise the Jewish people up to our level, but they see a fox running out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that's what upset them, because a fox, we know, represents a fox a fox is a pikeach shebachayis, it's the wisest of all creatures. Therefore, it represents the kind of perverted chachma that even in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, they're crying about it. How are we going to be able to bring the Jewish people up to such a level when you have these foxes, the perversion of chachma running around over there? And Rabbi Akiva explains to them how the Nevuahs of Uriah and the Nevuahs of Zechariah were saying are interdependent. The Nevuah of Uriah, Tziyat Sadat Techarish, that Yerushalayim is going to be plowed up, implies plowed up, again, similar to what Marashah says, in preparation for planting. There's something being gotten ready over here. and you think that the degradation that you have the shul running around over there, that the ultimate degradation, the result of that is going to be that there's also going to be the ultimate height that you're going to have, the Kenim Kenis, the Shari Yerushalayim, that they're going to have, they're old men and women, but yet they're going to be vigorous and youthful and healthy and all. So
degradation was intended
in order that from that, from the lowest low, you come to the highest height. And so they answer, Akiva Nichamtanu, because they're telling him that there's a double way in which you've comforted us. You've shown us how the degradation itself is part of an important part of the process of Geula. And in particular, also the Rebbe talks about in that sikha, the idea that you have. So the other ones, we said, who were the other ones? We had Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Yeshua. They are respectively a Kohen, a Levi, and a Yisrael. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is a Kohen. Rabbi Yeshua is a Levi. Rabbi Gamliel is a Nasi. He's a Yisrael. So like none of them are able to reach this kind of understanding because they all come from a family. They all come from Kedusha. Rabbi Akiva, who's Ben Gerim, Rabbi Akiva, who comes from a family of Gerim, where yesterday they were Goyim and today they're Jews. He's the one who's able to explain how you have from this lowness, from this lowness you come to these heights. And it wasn't part of their thing. It was a descendant of Sancheirav, actually. Not of an Esav, of Sancheirav. Not of Sancheirav, sorry, of Sisra. Of Sisra. Who was the Knani general over there. They understood. Once Rabbi Akiva explained it to them, they understood. But they themselves originally weren't shy after that because they're on a different level. They're from a family that they're from Tara. They don't understand what it means or what the ultimate in Birurim is that you come from Sholosh Klipot Atmeis and raise it up to Kedusha. Hadron Alach Elu Alokin Aslikol Amaseftimakis. As I said, we'll make the siyum. Be'ezus Hashem, we'll make the official siyum Thursday night. For now, we will start with a little bit of Masechta Shavuot and see where we can get, considering that today officially was supposed to be that Vav or Zayin. So,
instead of telling him, he said,
"Yeah, and why you're crying?" Yeah,
he answered the question with a question.
He answered the question with a question, as is the regular Jewish way of doing things.
When he said. Actually, the kind of water to Uriah, to Uriah ain't gonna get to Lloyd Frank.
The water to Natalia, right? Not that he was afraid it's not going to happen. It's a nevuah. It has to happen. But is it going to happen? Is it going to happen down here, the Matam Asal Tzachim? Is it going to happen in the full sense?
Rabbi Kiva lived after Uri. In other words, it already happened. It was a nevuah.
No, but that's what he's saying. We see now that, and that's the thing. Also, some of the Mephoroshim talk about it, or maybe they never talked about it, I don't remember, that the idea is also, Uriah said his Nevuah during the first Beis Mikdash. So that we should see, it didn't happen at the end of the first Beis Mikdash, but now it happened at the end of the second Beis Mikdash. That shows us that now also, don't think maybe the Nevuah of Zechariah is something that already happened in the second Beis Mikdash, and therefore it's not going to happen, loss of love. No, once we see now that the Nevuah of Uriah was deferred until the end of the second Beis Mikdash, then we know the Nevuah of Zechariah is going to happen after that as well. Up. The end of the first Beis Mikdash, the ceilings were destroyed, parts of the walls were destroyed, but most of the structure of the Beis Mikdash was still intact, as opposed to the second one, it's completely destroyed and then plowed.
Herod built on...
Never mind Herod. We're talking about when Titus destroyed the Beis Mikdash, and then a few years later, Turnus Rufus plowed it up. So that's the point. In other words, he's saying like this, before Uriah's Nevuah happened, meaning we might have thought, okay, Uriah's Nevuah happened at the end of the first Beis Mikdash. Okay, well, then Zechariah's Nevuah will happen at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, and we don't have anything. Well, it's lovely. But now that we see that Uriah's Nevuah only took place at the end of the second Beis Mikdash, only then was it seen in Tzadat Techarish, now we know that Zechariah's Nevuah is going to happen after that, meaning lots of lovers.